Hello, and welcome to Justice Society Presents Crisis, here on the JSA Presents podcast feed. This is our show covering the classic team-ups between the Justice Society of America and the Justice League, so Earth 1 and Earth 2 together. My name is the Irredeemable Shag, and I'm one of your hosts. Along with me is my co-host, the Earth 2, Rob Kelly. How you doing, buddy?
You know, Shag, having not read this story in a long time, I'm feeling kind of bad that we've been keeping Ryan in a cage for all these years.
But he's unconscious, and he, you know, last time we checked, he was a monster. So, I mean, it's probably not a problem, right?
I take it back. It's okay. It's fine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, it's Ryan. Angie probably, I mean, she sends us thank you cards every couple of weeks for it. So, folks, you know, if you've been following the JSA Presents feed, you know, we've done lots of episodes over the last couple of years, but we haven't done a JSA crisis episode in like 2 years. So Rob and I got to talk and we're like, okay, we really should do one of these because we love the JSA JLA team ups. And it's been a long time since we talked about one. So why did you pick this one?
First of all, we hadn't done this one, and you are very anti Silver Age. We know that you hate all the Silver Age comics because you're dead inside. And they only did one a year, so we were kind of, you know, there's a smaller pool to draw from. We've already talked about like our really big favorite ones, and as we'll talk about when we get to the synopsis, this one's really goofy.
And it's just one issue, which made it a smaller lift, really.
Well, so. I didn't want to get into that part of it, but yes.
So I do want to mention, by the way, because so folks, I mean, if you've read the show notes already, you know we're covering Justice League America number 113. And here's pretty cool, some sort of synchronicity here. So back in April, our friends, David and Peter, over on the Earth 2 podcast, which you should be listening to, by the way, if you're not, they covered this exact same comic. However, what they did was they did a full cast audio adaptation of the story. So they got in a bunch of really amazing voice actors and me and had us act out the story for them. And then they had narration and talked about it as they went through it. They very foolishly invited me to provide the voice for Rex TikTok Tyler, which was, you know, fun for me, but sorry for them. But I should definitely check that out on Earth 2 podcast from April 2024. It makes a nice companion piece to this episode, I think.
Why is Hourman saying y'all all the time?
Hourman said Wonder Woman's hot. That was weird. And one of the other things, too, is, I mean, we're trying to put some more stuff on the JSA Presents feed because beginning this August, I will be starting monthly coverage here on this feed. I'll be doing a show called JSA in the 90s.
Where
we're going to be covering. Yes, you hadn't heard about this?
No, I don't pay attention to what you say in the network feed, so this is news to me.
I've been very quiet about it. Very, 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 you know, shy. So, I'm going to be covering the Mike Parabak 10-issue series. We're going to be covering the 8-issue miniseries, which is kind of like the retroactive storyline. I'm going to be dipping in, doing like spotlights on Wonder Woman or Dr. Fate or whoever I feel like. So that show is going to run for about 2 or 3 years, and it's going to go monthly, JSA in the 90s. Then, as I complete that, immediately it will transform into JSA in the 2000s. And we'll begin to cover the amazing JSA series penned by, you know, James Robinson and David Goyer and Jeff Johns. So really looking forward to that. I don't know whether I'm going to call it JSA in the 2000s yet or JSA in the aughts. I don't like the way that sounds.
No, don't call it that. No.
But JSA in the 2000s just doesn't flow off the tongue either. I don't know what I'm going to call it. Anyway, in the noughties, I could call it the noughties. But anyway.
How about JSA the new century?
That's not... Yeah, that kind of sucks. But
how dare you? How dare you?
Oh, it's been a couple years since we've done this, clearly. So, but yeah, check that out. Starting in August, JSA in the 90s. Looking forward to it. So, you know, it's interesting, Rob. When we started JSA in the Presents a couple years ago, like there was nothing going on with the JSA for the most part at all, right? Now, since we started this thing, they've had another Justice Society of America ongoing series that has already come and it went for the most part. I mean, it's not done being published, but they've already announced they're canceling at issue 12. A lot of people have various feelings on the current Justice Society of America series. I'm not the world's biggest fan, at least of the first 6 issues. They kind of found their footing halfway through, but by then it's kind of too late. And so I really think they had an opportunity with that series and they didn't launch it properly. But what they did do really well, and you really should check these out, they did three miniseries recently. Alan Scott Green Lantern, J. Garrick the Flash, and Wesley Dodds the Sandman, and they were all 6-issue miniseries, and they were exceptional. It was great. It was Alan Scott back in the day. It was Wesley Dodd back in the day, and it was J. Garrick in present day with his daughter, the Boom, and just great, fun comics. So I'm so happy to see DC putting out some great JSA stuff, and it gives me hope that we'll have more soon.
All right, okay, so I was just about to ask when these were set, right? You
Yep,
said back
yep.
in the day. So they're still tied to, I haven't read a JSA comic in many years.
Sure.
They're still tied to World War II? Is that the
Absolutely.
okay. So you said the Jay Garrick, I guess because he's tapped into the Speed Force, he's not aging as fast.
Well, there's the
Is
Speed
that how
Force,
they
and
get
then
around that?
the Ian Carcool thing, I think, is still
That's still in
probably. Well,
continuity,
I
Ian
don't know for
Carcool.
sure. Somehow they've all stayed young to some extent, young-ish. So I don't know whether it was Zero Hour that did it or Ian. In all the reboots, I don't know where they finally have decided. But I just go with Ian Carcool because it's convenient for me.
All right. Because I'm
But
just like, all right. It was one thing when we were kids that they had
right,
the JSA still fighting crime. You're like, all right, these guys are pushing 60. Well, now you'd be pushing 100.
right.
Like, okay, there's a certain point where you're like, what's happening? What are we doing here? So, okay, good to know.
They've
Good to know.
kind of frozen them around 60 is kind of what they did. So
All right.
yeah, the Alan Scott one took place in the 40s, and it was interesting, guys. They made a big reveal a few years ago that Alan Scott was gay, and that he had kept that a secret all these years. So they weren't erasing what had happened previously. He still had children, but they were saying that he was in the closet all the time. So he's come out, and so that storyline takes place in the 40s, and it's about him basically being in the closet and what it means and what he's dealing with. And it was really interesting. The Jay Garrick stories in present day, you may remember we talked about the New Golden Age, where all these other characters got created in continuity. They were new retroactive sidekicks. I don't know if you remember that or not. One of them was Jay Garrick had a daughter that he didn't know about because it had been erased from history. And well, she's been reintroduced to continuity. So it's Jay as this 60-year-old guy trying to deal with like a, I don't know, a 15-year-old daughter and dealing with that. And it was really a lot of fun. That was a great series. And then the Wesley Dodds one. Full disclosure, I actually haven't read it yet because I was saving it till it was all done and they just recently finished it. So it's on my to read thing, but it's sort of in the vein of Sandman Mystery Theater. And everybody who loves Sandman Mystery Theater loves the Wesley Dodds Sandman 6-issue story. So I can't wait to dive into that.
Well, you're going to love my in-stock trades pick then.
Oh, what is it? So, folks, in-stock trades. So before we should thank our sponsors. This episode of JSA Presents is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. So what you got?
I have the very pretentiously named Sandman Mystery Theater Compendium One, featuring a foreword by Patton Oswalt. Well, flibbity-doo. This reprints Sandman Mystery Theater numbers 1 through 36 and the first annual, which means this book is, of course, it's by Stephen T. Siegel, Matt Wagner, and others. Covers by Gavin Wilson. The page count is 984 pages.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that is a big book. The normal price is $59.99, but in stock trades price is $34.79. So that means you save 72% off. Now, I don't, how many, do you remember any issues this book ran? I think it ran around 70, right?
I was like, I 70, 71 for some reason
So
seems
this
a
is
ton.
half. This is straight up half the book's
Okay.
run, which is kind of an amazing, document to put it together in this large of a book. But yeah, if you're a Sandman Mystery Theater fan, or if you've not ever read the book, this might be a, this is jumping into the pool neck deep.
Well, I remember by the early 90s, you had quit reading comics because you were dead inside. Did you read any of Sandman Mystery Theater?
I read a little bit of it and it
Okay.
just did not grab me and I
Sure.
never went back to it.
So you had to go into it in a completely different mindset. You have to go into it and go, okay, this is, kind of separate. I mean, it still probably is in continuity, but whatever, you just read it as its own thing. And what Matt Wagner was exploring and Stephen Siegel was hate crimes. It was all exploring hate crimes in the 1940s and what it meant to be a mystery man battling those. And it was just fascinating. And Guy Davis's art like took a while to get used to, but once you get used to it, you love it. And I mean, it was just you didn't feel clean after reading some of these. It was the bad guys were so horrible and just wow, great, powerful stuff. Really early Vertigo, exceptional work. So really can't recommend that enough. Oh, great pick. So I picked something a little more traditional, Crisis on Multiple Earths trade paperback, book 3, Countdown to Crisis. And so this one covers a whole bunch of JSA crossovers, including our favorites of like the Apocalypse crossover, the Secret Society of Supervillains crossover, Crisis on Earth Prime, and some other ones. You got writers like Jerry Conway and Marv Wolfman and others, art by Dick Dillon and George Perez and Rick Buckler and Don Heck. The covers by Kevin Nolan is 472 pages. So this is huge. This is like half your omnibus right there, right? Full color, soft color, normally goes for $39.99, but you can get it for $23.19, so it's 42% off. And I mean, come on. Like I just said, Apocalypse, Secret Society of Supervillains, Crisis on Earth Prime. These are amazing stories. They're so stinking good. Getting them all collected in one place, such a bargain. So, folks, for these and all your other trade paperback needs, please visit InStockTrades.com. Now, this episode is also sponsored in part with your Patreon support. Because, running the network with so many shows requires a lot of online hosting and other services. And just the velvet cage for Ryan alone is costing us a fortune. But a while back, we realized we needed some help with the expenses. So we launched the Patreon, and you folks really helped us step up and keep the network going. So if you're enjoying the Justice Society Presents podcast, the best way to support the show is by visiting our Patreon. And what's that URL, Rob?
Patreon.com/FW podcasts.
And while you're there, please consider supporting the network, and at certain tiers you get mentioned on your show of choice, just like these folks who asked to be recognized on Justice Society Presents. So our thanks go out to Alex Osias, Keith G. Baker, Michael Bailey, David Ace Gutierrez.
Gord Tolton, Jason Keene, Jay Campbell, and Ted Covington.
Again, folks, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcast. Now, we are going to take a quick podcast promo break. Rob's going to get out the velvet handcuffs, and we will be right back to talk about Justice League of America number 113. It's the year 1992, and the Justice Society of America, the world's first superhero team, make a triumphant return after 6 years trapped in another dimension. Finally home, the JSA find themselves relics in a world that has moved on. It's the age of pulse-pounding action, where the rules of fair play are tossed aside for gritty violence. Our heroes ask themselves, does the world still need a Justice Society? Oh, yes, it does. Join me, the irredeemable Shag, for JSA in the 90s. We'll delve into the 10-issue Justice Society of America ongoing series, drawn by the iconic Mike Parabek. We'll explore the 8-issue retroactive miniseries and unearth hidden gems from the era. Join us for JSA in the 90s, available as part of the Justice Society Presents podcast feed, beginning in August 2024. All right, you Earth 2 lovers, we are here to talk about Justice League of America number 113. Cover dated September/October 1974, was on the shelves June 4th, 1974. Page count is 96 pages, cover price is 60 cents. At least part of the cover, I guess I should say, is by Nick Carty. And thanks to Mike's Amazing World for that information. You want to talk about the cover for a minute here, Ron?
Yeah, I just want to point out that you said on sale date June 4th, 1974. Depending on when you're listening to this, that is 50 years ago exactly.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Didn't even think about that. Jeez. Oh, my gosh. We are really old. All right. I mean, you're older than me. Let's make that perfectly
crumbling
clear.
Crumbling to dust.
So, folks, you've got the 100. This is during the 100 page. Were they called giants or just 100 pages? I can't remember.
I mean, they're unofficially giants, but I don't think it ever actually says that on the cover anywhere.
Okay, well, it's just DC 100 pages across the top. You get your Justice League of America logo, and it says in between there, "This is just for you, Rob. Here comes TV Super Friends."
Yes,
there's a hyphen though between Super and Friends. I don't know if that's right, but. You have then three different inset pictures. So that's why I said Nick Carty drew part of the cover. So the new image is an inset picture that Nick Carty drew. It says, "A new JLA JSA shucker." And you've got Superman, Batman, Jay Garrick, and Wonder Woman fighting, looks like the Sandman, Spider-Man's villain from Spider-Man 3. And it says, "Can you guess the identity of the creature in the velvet cage?" You want to describe the other two pictures?
Yeah, I mean, they're talking about the reprints contained. There's the Justice Society, the case of the patriotic crimes, and there's like a hand holding the Capitol building, and then you've got the JSA jumping into the frame. And then the other one is the Justice League reprint, the Cavern of the Deadly Sphere, or of Deadly Spheres. And we see this guy playing like a giant pipe organ with some of the members of the Justice League trapped in these little bubbles that are emanating from the organ. Now, again, Chris, I always defer to Chris Franklin on this. But I think Nick Carty drew the whole thing. I think.
Oh, you think so? Okay.
Yeah, these insets look like Nick Carty to me. So I think they had him redraw not redraw, just basically do his own versions of these covers. Now, because this cover that the JLA one is the one I'm more familiar with. That was by Murphy Anderson at the time, because that was one of the original like first 10, 15 issues of the book. But I, judging by the line work and the anatomy, I think this is all Nick Carter.
Okay, I didn't realize it because Nick signed the beach on the Velvet Cage cover. Yep. You get the little Nick Carty thing there. So I didn't know, realize the other. I just figured there were panels from the comics or something. But okay, that would make sense if he kind of did a quick sketch redrew of the cover. That would make sense. Mm-hmm. And then at the bottom it says "Extra: The Story of the Freedom Train." Now today we're just going to focus on the creature in the Velvet Cage. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I mean these other stories are not really relevant to what we're talking about, but they are fun.
Yes. So, all right. Well, Rob, what do you tell us about the creators in this book?
Well, like I said, by the way, I do want to maybe just to talk about the artwork of the cover. I am a sucker for this trade dress, as you know. I love all this. Just these things. There's more balloons on this thing, you know, right, than like a kid's birthday party. You know, it's ridiculous. So I would never want to lose these covers because they're so fun. But I loved Nick Carty's drawing of the sand creature laying waste to Superman, Batman, Flash, and Wonder Woman that I wish in some cases we could have seen it as the whole cover, because I think it's such a dynamic image. I just think it's a very powerful, fun drawing. It would have been fun to see it full out as opposed to just squeezed into, you know, one third of the cover. But what are you going to do? That's the time when this was made.
Yeah, so he's knocked Superman for a loop. Superman's literally flipping end over end, flying at the camera. Batman is, I think he's leaping to get out of the way.
Yes.
But yeah, the sand creature has Wonder Woman in the grip of one hand, and he's actually holding Flash by the foot or the calf on the other one, and Jay Garrick's hanging upside down, and that amazing magnetic helmet's not falling off.
Yeah, it's really beautifully drawn. Just again, Nick Carty, man, he just knew what he was doing. So, okay, yeah, the story, as I said, is The Creature in the Velvet Cage. It's written by Len Wein. Penciled by Dick Dillon, inked by Dick Giordano, and the editor is Julie Schwartz. So, Shag, do you want to do the JSA roll call?
Call the roll of the Justice Society.
That doesn't syllables, no.
It doesn't quite fit. Anyway, from Earth 2, we have Wonder Woman, the Hourman, the Sandman, and the Flash, Jay Garrick. Who do we have from Earth 1, Rob?
Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, and Elongated Man, because you need him when you have Superman, Batman, and Green Lantern. Okay, very quick synopsis of the story. We hit the ground running as the first page of the story features the JLA and the JSA in a good old-fashioned superhero Donnybrook with some goofily dressed bad guys. When the Sandman gets an alarm in his car, the Sandmobile, I just made that up, and takes off without a word to his comrades. They follow him back to his home, where they find Wesley Dodds in a secret room, the Sand Cave, that features a giant glass bubble shattered into 1,000 pieces. Dodds tells them that the person in the bubble was his former sidekick, Sandy. He then tells them that, yes, he then mentions that years ago, during an experiment, something went wrong, and Sandy was transformed into a giant, malevolent, crystallized sand creature. Who luckily passed out from the stress before he got a chance to attack Sandman. Sandman then made the decision to imprison Sandy until he could find a way to reverse what had happened, and it stayed that way for years until today. The two teams spread out to find Sandy, and each time they do find him, he manages to turn into sand and disappear. He's finally stopped by the Sandman himself, who bets that somewhere deep inside, this creature is still his boy partner. This calms him down long enough for him to explain that a small earthquake had cracked this glass bubble, and Sandy was able to explain that in his new form, he could sense a bigger disaster looming and tried to stop it. Sandman can't understand, since he assumed Sandy was a mindless monster. It turns out that Sandy had been imprisoned all these years, trapped in both the prison of his body and the bubble, unable to ask for help because of the Sandman's knockout gas. This sends Sandman into a paralyzing despair, knowing his misjudgment has taken away years, if not decades, of his friend's life.
Ouch.
Oof.
Man, that ending. Wow.
I mean, enjoy your summer, kids. Right.
I mean, Sandy straight up says, yeah, when you first transformed into the monster, I was fine after a couple of hours. Like, holy crap. 3 decades he sat in that bubble.
I mean, not really. Because of these comic book superhero time, it's not been 3 decades. But in terms of real time, well,
You just said it yourself.
Well,
The
that's true. I
JSA are
guess it's the
still
40s and
linked.
this is the
Yeah,
70s. So,
they're
yeah, I guess
still
so. Yeah.
linked to the 40s. Now you could say, modern age, the time is like a weird compression, always
Yeah.
5 years or
No,
whatever.
yeah, I guess you're right. This is the 70s and the JSA is World War II. So, you're right. Now, Sandy, the character, had literally not appeared in that time. His
Right.
last appearance was in an issue of Adventure Comics back when Sandman was a feature. And then he just disappeared and was never seen again until this very story.
1946 to 1974, Sandy
Wow.
was MIA. Yep.
Wow. 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 Wow.
So
Wow.
let's kind of go through the book in order, sort of kind of, because I have all kinds of notes on here. Like this Horned Owl gang, like I am in love with these guys because, like, first off, I'm trying to figure out, are they? I mean, you make the assumption they're Earth 2 bad guys because they're there fighting them on Earth 2. But
Yes.
like then I started thinking, all right, this is a crossover. What if these are like Earth 3 thugs for the Owl Man? That would be awesome. I would love that. But I mean, there's nothing to indicate that's true, but there's also nothing to indicate who the hell they are. So we could make up this could be the character find of 1974 in 2024. Who knows?
This gang should be called the Hooters.
Oh, as long as they have the blowfish as well. Oh my gosh, that's great. Okay. So then I going on to the next, I love Wonder Woman is like checking. So Wonder Woman from Earth 2 is checking in with Batman. She's like, hey, speaking of your Earth, how's my counterpart? She's asking about Diana from Earth 1. And they have a little conversation and she's getting her powers back and all that jazz. But I love that the Earth 2 Wonder Woman is like keeping tabs on the Earth 1 version. Like, I don't know whether it's just general kindness. Or maybe she's like a little bit of Karen going on here, and she wants to make sure that she's living her best life and that her life is better than the other. Oh yeah, that girl lost her powers. I'm doing so much better than her. So I don't know which one works, but either one's fun to think about, I think.
I think it's just a plug for the Wonder Woman comic. That's just what
Okay,
Len Wein was doing
fine.
his job.
Taking the air out of my balloon. So all right, Sandy, I like the Sandmobile. He's driving a
Oh,
vehicle.
the Sandmobile rocks. I
It's
love
sweet,
that
isn't it?
sedan. Yeah, man, that is a sweet ride.
So you think about it, at this point, this dude has got to be what, 30? He's got to be 50 something. Oh, it's a midlife crisis car. That's what it is. Okay. So he's got a pretty sweet ride. But yeah, he's in his 50s. That's what it is. Okay. That makes sense. All right. So Sandman, he's like, his car alarm's going off, right? Weep, 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 weep. And he's like, oh no, I have to go. And he leaps and goes in. And everyone's like, what's wrong? Let's go follow him. What the hell? Really? Like, if Rob and I were hanging out and Rob said, I gotta go and peeled out of there, and I don't think me and the rest of the gang would be, let's go find him and break into his house. That just doesn't strike me as the thing. I think for all we know, maybe that was just like his doorbell ring camera letting him know that all his McFarlane Superpowers action figures had finally arrived and he's like excited. And then they're gonna go break into his house and he might have been having like alone time with the figures and it would have got real awkward real quick.
He's got a Grubhub delivery and it's getting cold. I gotta get out of here.
Right. So I just think that was a little bit of an overreaction on all these superheroes who were about to go get coffee are now going to break into his house. With that said, when they're flying there and like there's like a little Hal, does his thing. He creates the little platform and fly carries a bunch of people. Why is he carrying Superman?
Lazy, huh?
Right. Kal-El's like, on Earth 2, I am chauffeured around. That's how it works over here, I guess. I don't know.
I am acting like the Earth 2 Superman where they can only leap from building to building. I
Oh
can't fully
gosh.
fly. So it's a subtle dig. He's subtweeting, as the kids say.
Wesley Dodd, he's got a pretty sweet pad. I love the giant. So he's got this giant hourglass. Like you pull a book on the bookcase, this giant hourglass slides out of the way. Pretty slick.
You have to think our man is like, why don't I have that?
Right? Yeah. It's like, dude, do I go? He's probably like, just Wildcat, do hourglasses too? Like, am I putting cat shit? Oh, sorry, am I putting cat stuff in my apartment? No, we each have our own dig, man. You can have a beach in your house, not an hourglass, I guess. I don't know.
I've read this comic many times over the decades, and when I reread it for the purpose of this episode, like my eye just kind of, I was like, wait, why are they at Our Man's place? Because the hourglass was so
Right.
obviously, and I'm like, oh wait, no, that's Sandman. But it's like, what a weird thing. And then of course, talk about like an alarm bell to a regular person. You're like, why does this guy have a giant sand dial in his house? Like, what is happening? What is this weirdo? Like, what is going on?
You know, there's no obvious way to flip it either, and yet they're still staying crumbling out of it. I wonder
Yeah,
how
I
that
don't know. It
works.
must be like one of those water features that it refills, you know, there's like a tube and it shoots it back into the top.
Could be. All right. So we get Wesley Dodds, who has got his mask off. So I don't remember seeing Wesley back in the old days without his mask off. So I mean, I'm sure we did in the Golden Age, but I don't recall. So clearly he is separated birth twin from Bruce Wayne. Same apparently parents, I'm guessing. I don't know. Am I wrong there?
I think part of it is the inking by Dick Giordano. And I don't mean that as a knock. I just think his men kind of had that chiseled Superman Batman look. So I think everyone with had blue hair just ends up looking a little like each
Okay.
other.
Yeah, that works. Okay. So this is where we get to the interesting point where, as we said, so Sandman, you know, there was this accident and Sandy turns into a monster, which is so sad. And then he locks him in his basement for 3 decades. So, you know, Sandman is like, okay, I've kept this secret for too many years. Thank God I can finally tell someone. What exactly has been stopping him from saying anything for the last 30 years? I mean, at no point when they're sitting around having coffee, he's like, hey, Rex, I got to talk about something. No, apparently that moment never came up. So, yeah, I'm not quite there.
If only he was on a team with someone who had a magic power ring, or someone who was one of the greatest sorcerers in the universe, or someone who is quite literally the right hand of God that maybe could have helped on this. I don't know.
Well, it's a shame he isn't a member of a team like that, isn't
Yes. He spent all his time telling it to like the Atom and Johnny Thunder, and he's like, what am I gonna do? These they're nobody's helpful. None of these people are helpful.
All Johnny had to do was say, you, damn it. You just have one job, Johnny. I could have fixed it. So what is this silicoid gun gonna do anyway? Like, I don't like this is gonna solve all our problems. This silicoid gun. I don't know what. And why does the sand creature automatically have red briefs, you know, like
That's
okay, no other clothes except for that. So all right, so he talks about how he puts him in this velvet cage and all this stuff, right? So is that like a I probably learned that phrase from this comic, so I don't actually know, is that a common thing, like, you know, you and your velvet handcuffs, I understand, but like the velvet ca like is that a thing?
you mean a phrase like velvet cage? No, not that I know of. I mean, there's like gilded cage. That's a phrase. So, but velvet cage, that's probably, yeah.
It just
I think
sounds
that,
super S&M. It doesn't, it's not
yeah,
good.
I'm sure it was a, it played on in drive-ins in the 70s around this time. Maybe something Len saw in New York and was like, velvet cage. That's, oh, that sounds good.
That's my next issue.
Linda
So, you know,
Lovelace. And,
oh my gosh. So there's this moment where, you know, now this is the part of the whole reason this story happens, right? Is because Len Wein, and this comes directly from the Crisis on Multiple Earths, Volume Number 3 book. Len Wein did an interview in there, and in that book, he says, I'd always been a fan of the Golden Age Sandman and always wondered why he'd put back onto his double-breasted Man of Mystery gas mask outfit when he was revived instead of the more traditional purple and yellow superhero costume he'd worn in the latter days of the 40s. And that would make any thought this would make the perfect place to find out. And that's how the creature in the velvet cage came about. So here we get him. He's shredding the purple and yellow costume in order to put on his old school togs, which, by the way, looks so much cooler. The purple and
oh,
yellow costume
yeah.
never did anything for me. But so here he's bemoaning it. And he's like, I don't know what to do. I've got to go find Sandy. And everyone, like, you know, Superman, Elongated Man, like, hey, we're geniuses. We'll help you. And Superman says, we'd be proud to help you, Sandman. Believe us. You know, I feel like instead, Superman of the 70s instead would have said something like, dude, you locked your teenage sidekick up in your basement for 3 decades. You just Rick James your entire career. I mean, no. I'm on my own here, aren't I?
I just well, I just think he doesn't have to. He'll chastise him later. Let's solve this problem first. I mean,
Okay. All right.
or
So,
the
all right.
next meeting, maybe the next time they get together, he can, you know, when
There
they come
shall
to the
be a
satellite.
trial. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what do you think of the three different segments? You know, the wedding segment, the beach segment, and then I'm forgetting a segment here, aren't I? There's three. There's the wedding segment, the Sandlot segment. That's right.
Yeah,
Okay. So, what
yeah.
do you think of the three segments?
Well, I mean, again, you know, classic JLA story. I mean, there's a there. By the way, the reason that there's only this is just a one-parter. The JLA JSA team ups are always two parts, sometimes even three, is because this one the book. This was during the year the book was bi-monthly, And I guess they felt they couldn't do two parters for some reason, so that's why they condensed it. So it feels very condensed, even though Len wisely uses only four members of the team each, which kind of cuts it down a little bit. The thing at the wedding is weird. It's weirdly cynical.
Yeah.
Where it's like this couple are getting together and the mother's clearly against it. And she's like, Gazelle, today you'll be the happiest day of your life. And then from here on in, it's strictly downhill. I'm like, wow. Like, what?
She keeps calling the fiance, what's his name? Also.
Yeah. And then, like, as they're getting married, you see them in the background and they look unhappy. You know, like,
oh my gosh, she is. She's miserable.
Yeah.
I didn't even see
yeah,
that.
She's yeah. She's got her hand on her head, like, oh God, this is terrible. So I don't know. They're just doing some bit of comedy, I guess, for the giant sand creature to interrupt. So and Len Wein, for a short story with a lot going on, I mean, you've got to tell this flashback, he makes time for these little, not interstitials, but like these little subplots with, you know, the wedding, and then the bride and the groom start throwing desserts at
yes
that did not happen at our wedding, luckily.
I threw a couple things, but
you
anyway.
Did it was just you and Ryan. So I don't know why I'm shooting so many strays at Ryan's direction for some reason.
It's easy, I
guess. So so that's fun, you know. It remind, you know, it's got a little bit of that kind of Superman 2 flavor, you know, just
okay.
That kind of like, of course he's Jewish, like it's just a sort of like to give somebody a little bit of, and there's even like a button on it where the wedding, they wrap up the wedding and the woman's like, why don't you marry a nice boy like Superman instead of what's his name? Like, wow, man.
And then the bride calls him what's his name too. She couldn't remember her own fiance or
wow.
husband at that
Oof.
Point's name.
Oh boy.
And Elongated Man calls it out. He says, I think we've just been rescued by the Keystone Cops, which is great. I mean, that's awesome. I love that. And, you know, so the funny thing about the pies, besides the fact it's just ludicrous, right? It's just that Superman punching, you know, Sandy, the golden rock, isn't working. And yet the pies stop him and befuddle the monster, which is hilarious. And I do love, though, like, this is one of the things I love about these Earth 2 team-ups is when they go to Earth 2, because it's in the JLA comic. But the people who live on Earth 2 have no idea who the JLA are. So they see Superman, and they're like, oh, look, it's Superman. And it's our man. And they have no idea who Elongated Man
is. Who's that
is.
Guy? Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. And of course, when they see Superman, they're not even putting it together. Like, hey, isn't this dude like 30 years younger, 20 years younger than our Superman? But anyway.
He was clearly affected by the rays of Ian Carcool. And
oh, my Lord.
So yeah, no, then there's the second chapter with Batman, Wonder Woman, and Flash on this at this kid's ballpark. Batman takes a nice backhand from Sandy, which is
yeah,
nice.
He does.
You actually even have a panel of him laying on the ground, like blah, 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 kind of thing, which you don't see a lot of, which I thought that was fun. And Dick Dillon does, and then there's the Flash sort of, the Flash runs around Sandy and creates this sort of sandstorm and breaks him up. Dick Dillon gets to do a little Mysterioso Batman thing with the cape, which Batman didn't get to do very much in JLA. He was much more of a superhero.
Yeah.
So that segment is fun too. It's not as extensive in terms of the side characters as the wedding part.
Well, I do like also he did one panel with Jay where he did like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like 10 After Effects of Jay running in a circle. So that's fun to see because I'm so used to seeing that with Barry. You don't see that with Jay as often. So it just looks nice. I like it. And Batman, you know, it's pretty ineffectual in this story, quite honestly. So it does, and this will come up later, but it makes me wonder, why did we get Batman other than he's a marquee character at this point? I don't really.
Think that's it.
And he has the corniest line in this segment. He's like, there's more to that, Flash. I have a feeling there's a lot more to this puzzle than meets the bat cowled eye.
Yeah, that's
really
rough.
Bruce, that's wow, that's not good. That's
work on
not
that.
Good. Yeah,
work on that, Bruce. Yeah.
Work
yeah.
If you're gonna do puns, talk to Dick, he will coach you through it.
Yeah. And then the final segment is actually my favorite because of the opening panel on Muscle Beach of these pink hued muscle guys flexing, and there's all these girls in bikinis like, oh my god, it's, you know, the it's the hero of the beach kind of,
right.
You know, all that stuff. So that's just really fun and goofy, and I just love it.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, they try to impress the girls, they all fail, and, you know, Hal's even like, you know, what do we do now? And like, Hal's like, you do nothing, friend, except get out of harm's way. It's like, well, all right, Hal's got a chip on his shoulder because he's not a big muscle bound guy. But And you know, it's about Sandy since he's there, and I'm looking at him. Like, I will say, other than the silly red trucks, I do like the look. He's like, you know, he's big, he's yellow, he's rocky, he's got these great red glowing eyes, his head's all kind of chiseled and everything. He looks pretty cool as a rock creature. I like that.
Yeah, it's fine. It's sort of a classic DC Comics monster looking guy. So yeah, sure.
And then you get the big moment where so they've stopped Sandy, but then there's an earthquake out at sea, and so Superman takes Wonder Woman's lasso and literally gets a giant needle from wherever and literally sews the fault line back together, which is like pretty damn cool, actually, I think. And it's a neat idea when we find out that Sandy was trying to heal the fault lines. It's like, oh, because when you read it the second time, you see, oh, he's dissolving into the ground. He's working on the fault lines. It all makes sense when you read it the second time.
It's he packs a lot in. This is 20 pages, the story. That's it. And one of those pages is a splash page, which he doesn't even, I mean, it's kind of the story because that's where it opens up, but I mean, this is a lot. You're really getting your money's worth for this story.
But at no point do I feel it's too stuffed. I feel like it's just right. You know, like you said, he kept the group small. He got his three acts and paired off into groups. And I think if they dragged up to 2 issues, it would have been too stretched out, too decompressed. I guess they could find a way, maybe put some more acts, you know, in there, some battles or something. But I think it was just right. I didn't feel like it was too overstuffed. I mean, are you saying it was too overstuffed?
No. I'm just saying
Okay.
it moves at a breakneck pace, and
Yeah.
we'll kind of talk about that when we get to one of our little sub chapters in a
Okay.
moment. I do love though, if you count the splash page has no less than 15 figures in it.
Oh my gosh, really? Oh gosh, that's
15, because you've got the Hooters being fought by all the JLA and the
the
JSA.
Hooters.
I'm calling them that. I mean, poor Dick Dillon. Right. I mean, the man seemed there seemed to be no upper limit to how many pages he could draw because by the time the book would get into the 140s, they would increase the page count to the Jelly stories to like 40 pages. And Dick Dillon just drew those. And
Oh my gosh.
meanwhile, he was also doing like Black Hawk and
Right.
World's Finest and like the baseball game issue of DC Super Special or whatever. I mean, but at the same time, like I just look at that and I go, God, it took Len Wein 5 seconds to write a al you know a team a you know supervillain team is being beaten up by the JLA and the JSA. How long did it take him to write that? And poor Dick Dillon had to spend how long
Yeah.
drawing all that? I mean, whew.
Jeez, I didn't even think about that. Wow. Ugh. You know, the costumes are kind of the reverse of Our Man's, if you look at that. Like where his parts are black, their parts are yellow, kind of the back and forth. Maybe Dick took some shortcuts. I don't know. So I gotta talk about the very ending though. You know, Sandy is revealed. He's like, hey, dude, I'm perfectly fine. You kept me in a cage for 30 years for no reason. And you know, and Sandman's all sad. They're like, oh, poor Sandman, he's sad because you know he's a kidnapper. But what ha like what they don't resolve is what happens next, because Sandy does not get turned human for another 6 years. So is Sandy just walking the earth? You know, is he a monster going from town to town, you know, helping
Dun,
people?
dun,
Like,
dun,
exactly right. Is this like
dun.
the Hulk, except he's never human, and he just goes, you know, like he's working, you know, at the local grocery and you know, trying to blend in and. So then he fights the roughnecks in town. Like, I don't know. I want to know what story happens next.
Yeah, he does not appear again until DC Comics presents number 47, which
Yep.
was in another, like almost another decade. So it wasn't like writers were like, ooh, let me pick up and run with this. It's poor Sandy just gets forgotten again.
And here, because I mean, Sandy's there, and then Sandman's just staring off at the ocean. So, you know, Sandy probably left. He's probably like, deuces, I'm out. I'm not going back in your basement, asshole. Sorry, I'm a little saucy in
You
my
are
language
potty
there.
mouth
I
tonight. My
am. I'm
goodness.
sorry, folks. I apologize. But yeah, I would be. I'd be potty mouth if I'd been locked in a basement for 30 years. Goodness gracious. Oh wow. Okay. So, should we get into the features at this point?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, okay, one last thing I want to mention before we
Yeah.
get to these is we're like we said, we're not going to talk about the other features in the book, except I do just want to mention there is a bonus feature that is original to this comic, and it's a two-page little kind of PSA thing called the Freedom Train.
Oh,
And
yeah.
it's about a real thing, apparently, in the 70s, where there was a train traveling across America, featuring all sorts of historical United States related documents that you could, I guess, presumably look at or see, in some sort of, museum like context. And, you know, it's all just a little historical stuff. It's very Superman salutes the bicentennial kind of thing, except the opening panel does feature some members of the Justice League. I don't know who drew this. There's no credits on Mike's Amazing World, and I don't really recognize the style, but we do see Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, and for some reason, Aquaman is there. I don't know why. I mean, I'm not happy to have him there, but it's just weird.
He's on a green surfboard. He's on a, well, uncolored green surfboard too.
He's on like an ironing board surfboard, and he has yellow gloves, by the way. So this is the Earth 2 Aquaman.
No, he doesn't.
So, I don't know. There's a Superman head in the second panel, and then after that, it's just balloons. After that, and then the reprints are. So it's a fun little bonus feature. It's sort of baffling as to why it's even here, and the fact that they kind of work the, huh?
Why is it in black and white?
What do you mean is it in black and white?
Oh, wait, is yours in color?
Yeah, of course it is.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
I'm reading it on the DC Infinite app.
This is full color, yeah.
Oh, see,
I'm looking at the actual comic.
Oh, is his gloves really yellow? Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I thought you were kidding.
His gloves are yellow.
Well, I'm looking at black and white line drawing, so I assumed you were cracking a joke. So, yeah, no. When you read it on DC Infinite, the Freedom Train two pages are in black and white.
Oh, that's weird. No, this is in full color.
And that makes more sense.
This is the Earth 2 Aquaman. I don't know why he would show up just for the Freedom Train, but I'm glad he's here. So
maybe Superman and Batman are from Earth 2 as well.
Maybe so. Anyway, okay, that's all. That's all I had to say about the Freedom Train.
Well, we should mention also there is a two-page pinup towards the back of the book. I'm trying to find it real quick. Forgive me as I jump all over the place here. Oh, it's right after the JSA story, the reprint, right before the JLA reprint. There's a two-page Justice Society of America pinup, which I believe is new for this book, or is this also a reprinted pinup?
I think that's reprinted from another comic as well.
Okay. All right. Well, you've got – and it looks – like if you've seen the pinup by George Perez featuring like the JLA and the JSA kind of on facing pages, it's very similar to that, except this is all JSA. So you've got Superman and Batman standing up in the back as if they're like hall monitors or something. Then sitting down, you've got the Spectre who's got his arms crossed because he's pissed off. And then Carter Hall as Hawkman. You've got Hourman and the Flash. And then what is that? Wildcat and Mr. Terrific. And Johnny Thunder's whispering because it's like, hey, Dick, we're taking a picture. Shut up. Starman, and then in the front row you've got Wonder Woman, who looks a little uncomfortable. Maybe, you know, she don't want to sit next to Alan. I don't know. Alan Scott, you got Sandman, Dr. Midnight, who looks like he's reading something, except that dude's blind, so I don't know what that's about. Dr. Fate, the original Red Tornado, then the Red Tornado robot, and then Black Canary, and then you've got the Atom kneeling down on the ground because he's, you know, he's the kid of the group, so they make him sit Andean style. And then Robin in his, you know, retro Batman kind of funky Earth 2 Robin Batman costume.
I'm pretty sure this appeared somewhere else, but I just can't source in my mind where it's from.
Gotcha. Well, like 113, and I don't know my history as well. And so had Red Tornado already come over or not yet?
Yes. Oh, yeah. He joined in 106. So he was a member at this point.
He didn't look like this at first by this point. Would he have already stolen?
No. Well, that's why I'm thinking this is reprinted from something else.
Okay.
He had changed his look by this point.
Gotcha. All right. Well, it's still a nice piece. I do think it is sort of weird. Batman and Superman are standing out, but whatever. So, all right. Well, let's get into our features or superlatives or whatever we want to call them. First one is the All-Stars. So this is where we nominate which member of each team, both the JSA and the JLA, did the best job and deserves recognition. So, Rob, who's your pick for the JLA?
Well, I mean, nobody really stands out on this one. I mean, you could argue, you know, Green Lantern and Superman are the ones that fix the fissure in the bottom of the, you know, it's also not fair to give it to Superman because it's like he's Superman. He can just do everything. So I'm going to kind of give it to Elongated Man just because there's the earthquake and Batman, Sandman and Hourman fall into the crack and he rescues them. And it's like, it's pretty cool. You know,
okay.
Like it's not much, but it's something, especially when Len Wein is giving Elongated Man a chance to shine, even in two panels, when he's being teamed up with like the most powerful, you know, most impressive members of the team.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to do something cool. So, you know, kind of just in a nod, I give it to Ralph.
I mean, it's true. So yeah, Batman, Our Man, and Sandman fall in, and he rescues them. But standing next to him are Superman, Green Lantern, and Wonder Woman, all of which could have saved them
Doing nothing,
without.
just standing there, yes.
So yeah, so good for him. I did give it to Superman because him s literally stitching together the fault line, I just thought that was so cool looking. I just thought it was a great idea. I love the execution of it. It's corny as hell, but I don't care because he stitches it and then he pulls really tight. And I just thought that way, but you're right. Superman's kind of like, why does he even need a team? So he shouldn't get it, but I felt like none of the other members really deserved it. I feel like Batman did nothing. Elongated Man did a little bit. Green Lantern did a little bit, but Superman did something big. So that's why I gave it to him.
All right.
All right. So for the JSA, who do you think deserved the award?
Well, not Sandman, certainly.
No.
he'll get the next award.
Yeah, he will.
I guess Flash, just because Flash kind of gets the most to do in terms of using his powers. Again, it's everyone's moments are so brief here because this story is so full. But I think you have to give it to Flash.
I agree. Yeah, he's the only one that took a big dramatic action, even though it backfired on him. When he did that, he ran around and did a tornado around Sandy. It did backfire because it created basically a sandblasting storm. But everyone like Our Man, he punched some things. Sandman again, no. And Wonder Woman didn't really do enough. So yeah, I agree. Jay Garrick gets that one. So the next one is the Johnny the Johnny Thunder Participation Award. Which is in fact the award for the worst team member. So which team member had the most boneheaded move? We both just showed our hands. Absolutely the Sandman.
This needs to be renamed the Sandman Participation Award for worst team member. I mean, as much as I hate Johnny Thunder, he never did anything as boneheaded as this. I mean, good Lord.
Well, I think, but Sandman only made that mistake once, whereas, Johnny made that mistake every issue. So it's really Johnny can keep the name, but Sandman definitely earned it this time around.
Yeah. Oof.
So, Menaces to Society. This is everybody loves the bad guys. Who are what was the best villain moment? And it's hard to argue villain, but who or you can say antagonist. What was the best antagonist moment of the issue?
I mean, again, we really don't have any villains other than the Hooters at the beginning. So, I mean, I mean, the antagonist is Sandy because when he's in his monster form. So, I mean, I liked him coming out of the beach like Sandman. Like I thought that looked cool, but just, I mean, overall, I mean, actually him backslapping Batman, that's pretty impressive.
Something we've all wanted to do. So,
It so rarely happens.
for me, it was him merging into the sand and like going down to fix the fault lines. I thought that was once you knew that's what he was doing, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I like that idea a lot. And then your overall favorite moment of the story, it could be in the writing, the art, whatever. What's simply your favorite moment of the issue? I've already showed my hand. It's the stitching the fault line. I just love that.
I mean, I love Sandman's car. Sandman's
Oh, okay.
roadster is just really, really boss. I mean, and I kind of like that it's not like it doesn't have like a hourglass on it or anything. Like he's not Batmaning it, where he's like, oh, I gotta brand it. It just looks really slick. I mean, I don't know if that even counts as a moment exactly. And that, well, okay. But my other moment is that panel of the muscle guys flexing to the girls. Like that just is really charming to me. I don't know why the girls are colored. I mean, they're all Caucasian, so they're given that skin tone, but they're lighter. The guys are like pink. The guys are all like super pink. And I've got like, are they all sunburned? Like, is that what it is? Like, why are the girls not tan the way the guys are? I don't understand.
I'm going with it. The guys are there every day,
I guess,
and
yeah.
they're probably oiled up, so they're like magnifying the sun on them. Whereas the girls just come out like ooh and get a guy, and then they move on. Whereas the guys are there every day at Muscle Beach, or I'm sorry, Machismo
Machismo Beach. You know what? That's actually the best thing in the story is naming it Machismo Beach.
That is hilarious. So there's some other things that we talk about in these things that aren't quite as applicable here, so we can run through them really quickly. Like, they usually have a huge distinction between what's Earth 1 and Earth 2. Well, they didn't really. How did they do that this time, Rob?
One panel. Glad you guys decided to pay us a visit, Green Lantern. Not so certain I am, our man. We get enough of punks like this of the Horned Owl Gang. Oh, they're there, the Horned Owl Gang. On our own Earth. That's it.
Yep.
That's it.
That's all
Figure it out,
you get.
kids.
And then, but I guess, there was no crossing back and forth between the worlds. I mean, a kid could have just read this and assumed they were just teaming up and they live in different cities. I mean, there's no reason for them to think there's parallel worlds at this point because there was no two versions of the same character or anything like that.
Would they expected kids to have some sort of memory back then of previous
Or that,
systems?
no, but I'm saying you could pick this up off the shelf and not have to understand Earth One or Two, and you could still get the story. It's Superman's teaming up with Our Man for some reason, and okay, they're hanging out.
We didn't get the panel of the Earths next to each other and Flash stand the Flash is standing there, looking different or whatever. So, yeah.
I do love, and this takes us to a category where we talk about the specific heroes, where like they always like very carefully, like, okay, Hal's coming on this mission. I'm sorry, Alan, you're gonna have to stay behind. We can't have two of the same character here, or two Supermen or two Wonder Woman or two Batman. It's always got to be mix and match, which is clever. But so I started thinking about so of the JSA characters, who didn't make it and why, and who did? Like Sandman, obviously you need him for the story, right? That makes perfect sense. Wonder Woman, it makes sense to have her from Earth 2, not Earth 1. She didn't really do anything in the story, right?
No, I mean, but that way you get Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman in your story, and those are the marquee characters, so.
Well, were they in 1974, though? I mean, before Linda
Yes.
Carter was on the air, was Wonder Woman still a marquee character for people?
Well, I mean, not sales-wise, but there's she's in. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess. Superman and Batman, certainly, but yeah.
Yes. So, like, I started thinking, okay, Wonder Woman could have been replaced with, I don't know, like, we already had Our Man, who's a unique character, not on both Earths, but could have been Dr. Midnight or Wildcat or Mr. Terrific. None of them exist on Earth One
Well,
as
but then
well.
there would have been no women in the story at all. So.
Well, I was saying Our Man. You could replace Our Man with any one of those
Oh,
other
Our
characters,
Man. I'm
right?
sorry. Yes. Okay.
And then I thought it was strange that your two marquee characters both came from Earth One, Superman and Batman. Like, why they didn't just make one of them Earth Two? I don't know. Anyway, I was just playing the game of trying to figure out who and why, but I couldn't come up with any rhyme or reason really, other than maybe this is just who Len wanted to write. I mean, the only character that really mattered was Sam, and everyone else could have been anything interchangeable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm betting that Elongated Man is there because A, he had just joined the team in issue 105, so he was new. And Len, and I even interviewed Len about my article on the Red Tornado for back issue many years ago, where he purposely brought Elongated Man and Red Tornado into the book so he could have characters that he could write and give them backstories and develop them because they didn't have their own features. And having Elongated Man allows you to do the line of dialogue where people are like, who the hell's that guy? Because he's the one character that doesn't, I mean, it could have been Aquaman or and that Black Canary had just moved over. I mean, but so, like that gives them a chance to, so I think he used Elongated Man and Red Tornado a lot once they came into the book. Well, Red Tornado got killed off every 30 issues, but Elongated Man appeared a lot in this book again because it was one of the few characters the writers could manipulate without worrying about somebody else.
I was Red Tornado, I'd be like, hey, I want to go. I want to go see Earth 2 again. I want to go visit my old friends. But yeah. And then we normally talk about multiversal hijinks, which we didn't have any here. It's like the bonkers multiple Earth stuff. But then science. It's like, what would you say is the craziest science thing in this issue? Because there's a little bit in here.
I think Sandman knocking somebody out for decades and it just never comes up again just seems incredibly dubious on a number of fronts.
I would agree with that. I had the silicoid gun down because it was like, this is going to solve everything. And they never told us what it did, but it ruined this kid's life. But yeah, yours is better. 30 years locked up in a jail cell with weird gas. Like he figured out. I mean, he obviously had to spend time to refine the perfect gas to make this rock creature sleep. So this wasn't just a throwaway thing that he spent time on. So.
And what would have happened if the Sandman had, died during one of these superhero adventures and nobody knew about this Sandy, who just what was get what would happen?
You know what I just thought of? Ironically, sort of connecting to this, probably not on purpose, in Neil Gaiman's Sandman story, they kept Morpheus locked in a
They did.
basement
That's right.
for, I think it was like 80 years or something. I don't remember, but they kept him
That's
locked
right.
in a basement for a long time too. So I wonder, I mean, Neil's clever enough to maybe have done that on purpose. Maybe not. I don't know. But boy, there's a pair. Okay, so here, our post-crisis retcon. So they always said that, Wesley Dodds was having these prophetic dreams, right? Which is what drove him to go fight crime. And then in the post-crisis, they said that was being driven by, Morpheus was doing that to him. So maybe that's what happened. He had these prophetic dreams. Morpheus was locked in a basement, so he had to lock someone in a basement. Maybe that's what it is. There we go. We've solved it with
Perfect.
a
It all fits together.
All right. Well, now we're going to take a second to do a JSA character spotlight. This is where we take one of the characters and talk about them a little bit more in depth. And it seems obvious that we should talk about Sandy, the Golden Boy, a little bit here. So, Secret Identity of Sanderson, Sandy Hawkins, created by, I don't think these guys ever created any other characters, but it was created by writer Mort Weisinger and artist Paul Norris. I think they didn't ever create anyone else, right? Am I
That's
right
it.
there?
One and done, those two. That was it.
Yep. So, first appearance of Sandy was in Adventure Comics number 69. So, that's December 1941. So, this is 2.5 years after Sandman premiered. And his last Golden Age appearance was in Adventure Comics number 102, which is February 1946. So, he was only around for 4 years in the Golden Age. Made a heck of an impression, apparently, but it was only around for 4 years. So, he was created, obviously, as a sidekick to Wesley Dodds, the Sandman. And like Batman's Robin, Sandy was an orphan. Though Sandy had one surviving relative, it was his aunt. Dian Belmont, who was also Wesley Dodds' girlfriend. Now, I started thinking about this, and I realized, and maybe I'm wrong here, but like, with the exception of Batman, who I'm a post-crisis guy, so I don't even think of Batman as part of the JSA, by the way. But with the exception of Batman, I think Sandman is the only classic member of the JSA that had a teenage sidekick, which is so strange considering the proliferation of sidekicks in the Golden Age.
Yeah, I guess so, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't flash Green Lantern. Well, now, yeah, Green Lantern had like a humor sidekick.
Well, he had Dobby,
But
but he
he
was an
didn't, it wasn't
adult.
like a hero. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
So now Geoff Johns has since created a bunch of teenage sidekicks retroactively very recently, which is great. But yeah, in the Golden Age, that's the only one I could think of, which I was really shocked when I realized that.
And
So
it turned out super well.
they're talking
Yeah.
about
Maybe
Sandy. So his origin.
if someone else had had a teen sidekick, he'd have someone to talk to and maybe bring up some issues. I don't know.
Right, exactly. He could have said, "Hey, have you locked your sidekick in your basement for 30 years?" And Mr. Trivik's like, "What the hell are you talking about, Wes?" So, all right. So the origin, I actually went back and found that old Adventure Comics and kind of skimmed it real quick. So what happens is Sandman ends up battling this giant bumblebee, like this whole beehive thing, and Sandy is this kid who idolizes Sandman and dresses up as him, and he arrives wearing this pretend Sandman costume, and he helps Sandman defeat the Beehive. So Sandman immediately offers to make Sandy his partner because that's what you do. Say, "Oh, kid, you did a good job beating those bees. Let's endanger your life every month. Come on." So in the same issue, that's where they debuted, Sandman's new yellow and purple costume, the like superhero looking one. They don't mention it's a new costume. They don't do any of that. He's just wearing it, and it's awful big coincidence that Sandman's wearing this new costume and Sandy's wearing his sort of similar costume at the same time, but whatever. And they also don't mention his aunt, Dian Belmont, at all in that first appearance of Sandy either. So, but since then, they've done a whole bunch of retconning of Sandy's origin and involving Dian and various things about the costume. So, but and originally out of the gate, they were just fighting some bumblebees. Now, your notable appearances for Sandy, obviously he, was there for 4 years, but Adventure Comics number 102, they after that, in 1946, Sandman and Sandy, they just disappeared from publication. They're just gone. Then Sandman comes back with the JSA, right? And with the JLA series at some point. But in retcon stories, and this is where Roy Thomas's fingers come in here, he shows up in like All-Star Squadron, he shows up alongside the young All-Stars, things like that. But when the JSA returned in the 60s, Sandman is back in his traditional gas mask and fedora, like we talked about here. And as you mentioned, Rob, there's no sign of Sandy from 1946 to 1974 till this issue. That's it. And 6 years later, DC Comics Presents number 47 in 1982, Sandy's finally turned back into a human self, and he finds out that he hadn't aged at all in that time physically. He's still a teenager, which
What
is,
luck.
well, luck, but also, like, dude, I'm like 50 something. I don't want to be a teenager anymore. I certainly wouldn't want to be in a teenager's body, that's for sure. So then he shows up in the last days of JSA in 1986, where he goes to with the JSA to Ragnarok. I had forgotten that. In my research is when I stumbled across, I forgot he went to Ragnarok. Did you remember
I mean, yes. I mean, I didn't like sit there thinking about it, but now that you
that? Okay.
say it, like, yeah, he got roped into that as well.
Yeah. So he comes back in 1982 in Armageddon Inferno, which is better left forgotten. They all come back, including Sandy. And at that point, again, he's still like a 14, 15-year-old kid. We don't really see him again until 1999 when the JSA series launches. This is the starts off as James Robinson and David Goyer, then Geoff Johns takes it over. And that, did you read that series at all? I don't think you did you?
No, I did not.
Rob, it is so stinking good. It is the best superhero comic, super team comic published in decades. It is phenomenal. So when that series starts, Sandy is probably in his 20s or 30s, at least that's what he looks like. And in the first issue, Wesley Dodds does die because he's like a zillion years old. And those prophetic dreams that Wesley Dodds have now manifest in Sandy. So Sandy now has these prophetic dreams where he has to go and hunt down criminals. Additionally, and because of the comic we just read, Sandy discovers that his time as a sand creature has given him this whole new set of powers. They call it, well, no, it's really cool. It's called geokinesis, is what they call it. But basically, he's got sand powers now. He can transform into sand, like Marvel Sandman. He can phase through the earth, basically like phasing, like it's almost like swimming through the ground. He can mentally manipulate the earth and the soil around him. He can cause like earthquakes. He can shape sand. He can do like blasts of sand. He's sort of empathically connected to the earth. He doesn't age anymore. And he becomes the leader of this new JSA because they see him as a bridge because he was with the original JSA, but he's still young. So he's with the new members like, Power Girl and Star Girl and all these things. So he's a bridge between the JSA. So he actually becomes the leader for a while. And it was pretty cool. I really dug it. They called him, his new name was Sand, just simply Sand. And that was his name. And he was badass in the JSA series. He really was. Then later on, when Geoff Johns did the subsequent Justice Society series, he actually had him assume the mantle of Sandman, and he donned a costume similar to Wesley Dodds with the whole gas mask thing going on. And he's still active today, supposedly. We haven't seen him in a while, but he's still active today.
Wow, I did not know any of that.
So I mean, he really was cool as Sand because it was the old and the new together. It's like, okay, let's honor the past by having Sandy the Golden Boy around, but let's give him a whole new set of powers. Very new, very modern. Different direction, and that's what the JSA, the first JSA series was all about, which was honoring the past but telling new stories in a new direction. And he was a great example of it. So I love that character, and I loved what they did with him.
Okay.
All right. So anything else about the issue that we want to comment on?
I don't think so. Again, after this, they went back to two-parters and even three-parters. But so this one does stand unique. It's the only JLA JSA one and done.
It was a lot of fun. So, and remember, you can go check out the Earth 2 podcast for an audio adaptation of this adventure. So, again, you can cheer on Rex TikTok Tyler there. It's on April 2024 from the Earth 2 podcast. It's well worth your time. Peter and David do a great job on that show. So, definitely check it out. And then remember, coming in August, JSA in the 90s. So, we're going to go all extreme. No, actually, we're not at all. It's all about senior citizens not being extreme. It's actually what it's about. So it's super cool. It's like Rob, basically.
Yeah, I was about to say it's us, but thank you for singling me out.
Well, you live in the villages. I mean, come on. So, so Rob, if they want to leave comments on the show, where should they go?
You go, no, don't do that. No, of course, you go to fireandwaterpodcast.com and please leave comments on the post related to this episode.
Awesome. You can find us on Facebook as the Fire and Water Podcast Network. On Twitter, you can find us as FW Podcast, or we have our own JSA Presents Twitter feed as well. We also have one for Blue Sky as well over there as JSA Presents. And you can email us at justicesocietypresents@gmail.com. Well, that is going to do it. It's been a number of years. Hopefully, we can do some more of these crises coming up. We got to figure out a couple more crossovers that we like. And honestly, we haven't done Crisis on Earth Prime in like 10 years at least. And if we're already redoing Who's Who, why can't we do Crisis on Earth Prime now on this show rather than the Aquaman and Firestorm show where we did last time?
That's fair enough. We did that right at the early onset of the show. And yeah, it's been a very long time. And that's a fantastic team up.
Yeah, well, we foolishly invited Frank for that one too, if I remember
Yeah, that's, yeah. Well, we didn't know what we were doing back then.
right. All right, folks. Well, that's going to do it. I'm not sure if we're going to have another JSA episode before August, but I mean, it's right around the corner. So stick tight for more JSA monthly action coming to this feed soon. Until then, folks, join the fight.
For justice. Bum, 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 Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Bum, 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 bum. Make him the cutest that I've ever.
Hudson Clover. Bum, bum, bum. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, I'm so alone.
Bum, 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 bum.
Don't have nobody to call my own.
Bum, 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 bum.
Please turn on your magic beam.